Rey, Kylo, Poe, Finn, all dead. The Nordy Screencast.
You're listening to the Nordy's podcast. I'm Eric. I'm here with Ryan and Jim. How's it going, guys?
Oh, pretty good.
It's going great. Are you like holding off laughter right now?
I thought that was funny.
All right. You like the cold open?
Yeah, they're not actually dead.
Yeah, they're not. Well, but, you know, may or not. Well, you know, we're going to do reviews today. Spoiler free.
I was just imagining like just a couple of people just being enraged.
That happened.
You think that if that had actually happened, it would have a better or worse rating on Rotten Tomatoes audience score? Because it's abysmal. I do not understand it at all. We'll have to get into it.
Yeah, we'll get into that. So how have you guys been? We were with you guys earlier with our sports cast. Second time this week. Hopefully it's a short week for some of you guys as we head into the holidays. How are you guys doing, and what do you guys have planned out for the next couple days?
Well, we have a full week, but we have a short week next week. I've got Monday and Tuesday off next week, so that'll be nice. Mm-hmm. Leading into New Year's, and then we get a couple days off there too, so that's kind of nice. So we don't have a short week this week, but lots of family stuff. You know the deal. Some last-minute shopping, but I think most of the shopping's done.
Hell yeah. Thanks to Amazon, straight up.
Props to Amazon.
Shout out to like Scott Wilkie and the UPS team that makes magic happen.
Dude, the Amazon trucks, they're not even UPS. They're just these random white vans that pull up to your house and deliver packages.
They leave a package, take a kid. I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah, no big deal. I mean, they just check my windows, make sure they're all secured for me, and then yeah. They're on their way. So
exactly.
No, it's going to be good. I think it's, with kids, it's a little difficult for the holidays, but luckily my family breaks it up, so we go to my family Christmas Eve, Sonny's family Christmas Day, so there's not a lot of driving around. It's nice and easy.
Dude, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about all of that as well. My plans look similar. Jimbo and I have a little family time to do on Wednesday, as yeah. We are going to go to some crazy escape room. So
we're doing an escape room. It sounds pretty wild. Eric, you tried to sum it up for me. I feel like I'm just plugging into the Matrix. I'm not exactly sure what's going
to
happen.
I think that's the plan, that we're going to be plugging into the Matrix and trying to escape.
So you guys are going to be like naked, covered in goo.
Lube us up. Yeah. It's, you got to sign this pretty lengthy waiver first.
Yeah, one of us will take each one of the pills and we'll see who.
I was going to say, which pill are you taking?
Dibs on red.
Yeah. I'm going in.
Sorry for the naked lube talk. I made it awkward.
You did, and now I'm like, where can we find that?
This is like pretty similar to the black eye comment from last episode.
I think whatever you do now, yeah. Moving forward for the escape room, Jimbo's gonna be disappointed if there's not like something involved.
Pills, nudity, and lube.
That sounds like a Stefan sketch from SNL. It's got pills, nudity, Matrix style.
What's it called?
The Love Boat.
The place.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Oh, damn it.
You really want me to? I'm not goddamn, I thought, you know, Bill on SNL, okay?
I thought you were going to hit one there, so.
Yeah, well,
all right, guys,
teeing it up
you tossed a softball to him, and he struck out.
So. I'm striking out a soft pitch softball at this point.
All right, guys, so we have a real special beer in front of us, back with Fair State. Jim, what can you tell us about it?
Nope. Sorry, we're not going to Jim. Eric.
Well, can you just tell me what the beer is first?
Right, I'll tell you the beer. Enough. Okay, so look, in the last podcast, we enjoyed the standard issue, limited edition, Raspberry Roselle from Fair State. We are back there with their first ever double. Comes in a big old bottle, 750 mil type of deal. You guys, it's better. I think it's better. It's more expensive, right? So it better be better. And I think it's really, really good. It's like, you know, 8% as opposed to 5.5%. And it's just like unfiltered more so. It's just like Wonder Juice.
Again, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to go with unfiltered and Wonder Juice.
Amazing.
No, it's
once again, no take on the beer.
All right. That's what you guys are putting on yourselves at the escape room.
Yeah, Wonder exactly. Juice. That's the name of the escape room, actually. We finally came up with it.
No, it's honestly really good though. Again, just the best name in sours. This one to me, I think I get like more of the raspberry. It almost seems like thicker to me.
Oh, as it's I'm very drinking
it.
Thick.
It's like a pretty thick beer to drink, but that shouldn't gross you out or anything.
And it has a more. It's sweeter than the other one. Yeah. I mean, there's more alcohol. It's usually going to be a little sweeter, but it tastes like more like raspberry fruit sweetness as opposed to just yes. You know, added fermenting sugar.
Yeah, I would definitely say this would make a great gift for someone if you're running around scrambling for your 21 and older friend who likes experimental and fun and wild beers, some of the finest in the area. Get out there, get one of these bottles and try Fair State out for yourself and share that joy with some of your friends because they're incredible and they are doing some of the finest work in the Twin Cities. Longtime friends of the pod.
We love them.
We do. We do love them.
Shout out to Peter.
Yeah, man. Thanks for this beer we're enjoying.
Yeah, so go try it out. Obviously, one of the coolest things they've put out recently. Yeah, it's wonderful. We're going to enjoy this. And while we are sipping on this, enjoying it, you guys are going to give us a follow on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Northeast Podcast. You could always give us a follow on iTunes or Podbean. Make sure you get the podcast directly to your phone. At least twice, sometimes three times a week. Exciting stuff.
That's good stuff.
All right, guys. So it's about that time to jump right into our screencast. And the only place we could start is with a spoiler-free review.
Mostly spoiler-free. If you haven't seen The Last Jedi, fast forward a little bit. If you don't want to know anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's... If you're just excited to see it, I don't think we're going to get into any plot. No, we'll talk lightly on characters just our general impressions.
You don't want to read reviews before you've seen the movie.
Yeah, some people don't, right? Yeah.
So if you don't,
I think all
don't
those people who are weird like us or like that already saw it.
Yeah.
Anyone I agree. Else and so like, next week, whatever. We're going to be like, dude, we're going to do a full-on talk of all plot points, everything on the table. This is going to be a little shorter, and, you know, we all saw it. We want to talk about it. So we'll keep it spoiler-free, though.
All right, guys. So you guys saw it on Friday afternoon. I saw it Friday night. Give me one positive about the movie, one thing, one character, one thing that they changed that you really enjoyed.
I'll give you, in one word, my favorite thing about the movie, and that was unexpected.
Just a word?
It doesn't have to be a word. It could be anything. Like
that was my take, man. It was a very unexpected. It was. I mean... The trailers told us absolutely nothing. They really didn't.
The trailers told a different story. I thought that was what was so masterful about it. They gave you a story in the trailers, and the movie itself didn't really go in that path. And it was fun to hear the things from the trailer in the movie, and you were like, oh, it was really pretty simple. And it's
they weren't talking to that person at all. These scenes were cut together. They're 45 minutes apart. It was different.
All right, I'm going to tell you a couple things I really enjoyed about it. One of them would definitely be... the lightsaber battles. I'm not going to say who, but you know a couple people who have lightsabers, and anytime that those came into play, it was really exciting.
Really well done action scenes for sure. Rian Johnson did some amazing work with, you know, the choreography, just the epic feel to them. They made lightsabers maybe more badass than ever.
Well, they did.
But not forced in the way...
Of
Yoda in the prequels, Attack of the Clones.
Like incredibly crazy acrobatics, twisting and jumping in the air. I mean, it's not that stuff.
No, it
seems
more
like much more realistic of how you might fight if you had the Force and lightsabers.
And you were new to it, right? Technical, refined, but still a little sloppy at points, you know? Like where they're not completely infallible and they can't be hit by anything ever.
Obi-Wan style, right. Yeah.
I think it was... such a different take on the Star Wars world that really drew me into it. And, you know, obviously The Force Awakens was lamented for being A New Hope 2, for lack of a better term.
It was, man. It really was bad in that way, yeah.
And this went in the completely opposite direction, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was better. I thought it was a nice, cool, new, refreshing, different way of doing Star Wars. There were definitely some shout-outs to Empire. There were a few, like, tip of the caps, if you will, being that it's the second one and everything's supposed to be dire, you know, that kind of scenario.
Yeah.
It really did well.
Yeah. In my opinion. Overall, it was a pretty simple story. You know, it it wasn't this, it was a long movie, but it didn't take place over a long period of time. It wasn't jumping all over the galaxy with all these different characters happening at different times. It was pretty simple, man. It was pretty much like, hey, here's our situation. We're going to take it from the beginning to the conclusion. And I love that.
All right, let's go through a little winners and losers. Some winners and losers. I'll start with a couple just so you guys get the idea. Definite winner, lightsabers. Very cool.
Big win.
Big winner. Are you ready for this? Porgs.
Porgs were successful.
They were a winner.
They were not annoying at all.
Big winner, Luke Skywalker.
For sure.
Much better than I thought.
I've never seen Mark Hamill this good in anything.
Big loser, answers. Answers to our questions.
Really?
I think that
I thought we got some answers, man. I mean, we can't talk about them here, but
I would just say, in general, answers, didn't get enough of them. A lot of questions that I had going in, still have them.
Yeah. I think that's what makes the franchise so valuable, because they technically have four more movies in this arc.
They so do for sure.
Yeah. No, the other one's a standalone
triple set. They're doing episode 9, which is whatever.
That's the finale of this.
Then there's three more.
No.
Yes, there is. There are. There are three more, and then there's Rian Johnson's trilogy. There's six more, I promise you.
Oh, I hope there are.
We'll find out.
Because at this point, I will bet my son's life that they're doing 10, 11, and 12. They've already announced this. They're doing 10, 11, and 12.
Oh, he's going to be so bummed when he's hears really this. Pissed.
No.
I mean, at this point, I just hope you're right.
They're for sure doing 10, 11, and 12.
Oh, that's going to be great then.
I don't want that.
I do.
I thought it was going to end next one. I'm pissed. Well, we'll see. Okay, look.
Anyway.
I believe you, but
we've gotten off track.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're not going to just serve up all the answers that you wanted from the first movie in the second movie. And they gave you a little bit. They gave you enough.
They give us quite
a bit. But they're
going
to give you, they're not going to give it all to you at once. They're not going to spoon feed you everything.
All right, I'm going to give you a few more of them, guys. A loser is beverage options in the Star Wars universe.
Okay. Thought island milk is not your first choice?
No, that's not for me. Okay. I'm going to say a loser is, what's the guy's name? Finn?
Finn, yeah.
Finn. He had a big subplot, pretty damn pointless. So that was maybe the weak point of the movie. I'm going to give another loser to Phasma, who, if you were looking for her to jump to the forefront and maybe make her character worth something, it didn't happen. Did not happen. Also, big loss with no Knights of Ren at all.
Yeah.
I don't think that's really spoilery, because it's kind of like, you know, they weren't going to be plot integral. But weren't they supposed to be these awesome, Kylo's
his
team, his bros.
Yeah.
They were incredibly evil. They did everything together. We haven't seen them once outside of a rainy flashback shot in the first movie.
I'm going to say winners, the space fuel companies.
Okay, space fuel.
Yeah.
Stock went up. Very important.
Yeah, clearly. Really important. I mean, honestly, that's
do not run out of gas in space.
No, that's really bad.
I'm going to say winner to random new actors that have joined the game. Laura Dern was unbelievably good. Benicio del Toro pops up. He's awesome. Justin Theroux all of a sudden was like, had a line. I mean, they weren't afraid to just be like, hey, here's a super famous person inserted into Star Wars.
No, I agree with you on that one.
And they were good.
Let me think. Oh, ooh, winner, Disney.
Clearly, they had a good week.
$220 million first weekend for them, which is going to put them right around the biggest movie debut of all time.
Where was it compared to The Force Awakens?
I thought that was over three, so.
Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see the final numbers after
the weekend. Yeah, because we did some kind of projections on that a while back.
I'm going to say also winners, Showplace Icon Theaters in West End.
Yeah.
Constantly, first of all, we had a little bit of food there.
For the first time. And now we used to go to the Yard House and then for food and then go over. Dude, their food was so good. I'm just going to eat there, drink there.
You wouldn't think a movie theater would have good, sort of like bar food is the way I would describe it. It's all pretty good.
Yeah, we had a good time.
They have like bacon popcorn. They got pretzel bites. They got nachos. Chips in three different dips. I had
tacos.
You had some Baja or Bang shrimp tacos that looked amazing. So I had some fried chicken sliders that were incredible. Overall, Winners, in my book.
Losers, you guys' bank accounts.
Worth it.
It's cheaper than Yard House, guys, unbelievably.
It is pretty exciting to look at the opening weekend's biggest ones ever. So here's an idea for you. Number 10, Batman versus Superman. Number 9, Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows 2. 8, Iron Man 3. 7, Beauty and the Beast. 6, Captain America Civil War. Mm-hmm. 5, Avengers Age of Ultron. 4, Marvel's Avengers. So 3 straight from them.
Yeah.
3, Jurassic World. 2, Star Wars The Last Jedi. And number 1, Star Wars The Force Awakens. So not as big as the first one, but the second biggest in the history of movies.
Well, and that might not even be up to date with today's figures, too. So it might go up significantly. I don't know if it's going to go up enough to pass The Force Awakens, but
yeah, because it should be considered. Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, it was really good. I'm trying to think of any other like obvious winners, but you can't get, you know, too crazy but
I think depending on who you ask, I think some of the people would say losers are the fans, and then other people would say the winners are the fans, because there's this revelation that's sort of sweeping the fandom, which is, oh, The Force Awakens was too samey. We hated it. And then in the same breath, they're like, oh, we hated their Last Jedi because it was too different.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want?
That's insane to me.
It's stupid. I mean,
and you know what? This is us once again, and everyone, including the industry, putting too much stock in Rotten Tomatoes. It's not the Bible. It's not going to tell us what's right and wrong, and you don't have to hold true to it. And yes, I mean, critics score 94. Audience, I think, not even 60. 59, 58. Just really low. I mean, that's like fucking bad.
Don't mess with the Star Wars nerds, though.
That's what it is, too. I mean, it's a certain type of person that leaves the movie and goes on to Rotten Tomatoes and logs in. You can't just upvote shit and gives it a rotten.
I think people are going on there out of anger. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just like people... I think so many people think of Star Wars as their childhood. I was not really one of those people. Like, I have to admit, guys, I was pretty late to the Star Wars game.
Oh, yeah, you were.
And so I think at this point, I'm a much bigger fan than at any other point in my life. I didn't really watch the movies for most of my life. And so I think that there's just people who just think of Star Wars as their childhood. They hold it so near and dear, and they are just, you know, on defense mode anytime that they think anyone is messing with it. And so I think that kind of changing up what Star Wars looks like a little bit, moving away from kind of the storylines that we are so familiar with, it's kind of got people on the defensive about what they think about Star Wars in the universe.
But if they would have made another Empire or something, you know, that was The Force Awakens to A New Hope, they would have been lambasting it for being
up frozen in carbonite at the end.
Everyone would have flipped out.
Everyone's outraged.
Dang, I can't believe you think Poe is...
Oh, Poe's our new Han Solo.
You think so?
Oh, for sure. He's the swaggy rogue pilot that follows his own rules.
I mean, it's a little bit different, but...
I feel like you guys are going to get us in trouble when you try to tell me that Finn is our new Lando.
Well, Finn...
kind of hard to go into that. But no, he's not quite in that same vein. But if they would have done something like that, everyone would have flipped out too. If it had been the same plot twist that Empire had, I think everyone would have said, oh my God, you just made the same movie again. We can't keep doing this. Make something different. And then they make something different and everyone's upset. I will say this. I loved it so much that I have 100% full faith, trust in Rian Johnson's new trilogy that he's doing moving forward. I have no problems with him helming that. I don't know if he's going to direct and write all three, but whatever involvement he's going to have, I fully trust it.
Yeah, he did a great job with this movie.
I'm going to go into my take then, all right? My take was my expectations were too high, and I put too much stock, like Jimbo said, into Rotten Tomatoes, and I was expecting a perfect movie, and it was really good. It wasn't perfect. There were flaws. There were, you know, holes in the story. There were things I wanted answers to that maybe I'll get eventually, but I just didn't get yet. And so...
Would you change your review then if in the next movie you get answers to some of the stuff that you're looking for?
I mean,
or did you want it all in the second movie?
No, I'm just saying I think that the movie was good. I just think that I went into it expecting it to be just perfect. And that was the wrong way to go into this movie.
Why would you ever go into any movie thinking it was going to be perfect?
I just think that like the critics liked it so much. The hype was so much. Like, we've been hearing about it. Everyone's been so excited about it that it just didn't quite live up to my just unrealistic expectations. So I guess my best advice would be, if you haven't seen the movie yet, to go into it thinking it's going to be a good movie. It's going to be really, really fun. But you know.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be intense. It's going to be serious at times. And yeah. It's going to be not serious at unexpected times, which I don't know for good or bad.
But. I just think, like, I went into the Justice League with low expectations, and I enjoyed it. And I went into this movie with expectations that were just probably unrealistic. And so I'm just saying this more not as something to complain about.
Sounds like
you're
talking as a Vikings fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
It's literally the Minnesota... That's way, the way of looking at things.
I'm just saying, if someone would have told me, you know, if I would have talked to someone before and they would have been like, yeah, it was really good, but, you know, there's things I wish would have been a little different.
I think that you can go into any Star Wars movie thinking that.
Yeah.
Like, it's probably going to be good and entertaining, but it's not going to win Oscars. Like, yeah, that's not the type of movie you're going to see.
Where do you guys rank this one amongst the other?
I put it,
7 Star Wars movies. This was the 8th.
I'm putting all the prequels down in the bottom... 3rd.
Okay, so like
whatever.
Like the worst being maybe it just goes 1, 2, 3.
It goes 1, 2, 3 for
yeah,
me.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's pretty standard. You could flip flop 2 or 3.
3 being the best.
Yeah.
Okay. I agree with that.
I would put Empire first because and so Eric was talking about the
Empire
childhood.
Favorite ever. So yeah. We're now talking about your best. Okay.
Empire is a childhood movie for me. That is something my dad taped on a VHS tape from WCCO and I watched it until the tape gave out. Like, that's how many times I watched that movie. I loved it so much.
Yeah.
So that, for me, is number one. And I think if you asked most Star Wars people, they'd probably say that's one of the top movies.
Yeah.
Predominantly.
For me, too. That is my favorite.
I would put this one second.
Yeah. Me, too.
Honestly.
Yeah.
And that includes Rogue One.
Oh, I wasn't including Rogue One.
I would include Rogue One. I would put that maybe somewhere below A New Hope. Definitely ahead of Return of the Jedi. And definitely ahead of the prequels, but mm-hmm. it's not my favorite, but I thought it was overall really good.
Are you guys excited for mine?
It's the best one ever.
I'd say that, no. The best one was probably the Phantom Menace.
okay.
After the Phantom Menace, okay. Probably.
So you're
right. We get where this goes.
No. Okay. I'll give you it for real. For real, I would say the best movie in my opinion was The Force Awakens. The second best was The Last Jedi, this most recent one. Third best, I would say in a very controversial way, was Rogue One. I know it's not really part of the same
I swapped
story.
Those. Yeah.
So you like all the new ones.
Yeah, I do. After that, I would say Empire Strikes Back, followed by A New Hope, followed by Return of the Jedi. Then I'd go...
Sith, Clones.
Attack of the Clones, Sith, and then Phantom Menace is unbearable.
You thought Attack of the Clones is better than Revenge of the Sith? Revenge of the Sith was excellent.
Yeah, but
I mean, it really was actually
the fight scenes
pretty good.
Were so much better in number 2 than in number 3.
Really?
Number 3, they fought in like on those robots in the lava.
That was a cool scene.
It
was a little silly.
It was
silly.
Pretty bad. It was hard to watch.
But it ended great. I have the high ground. It's over. It's great.
Yeah.
You should do more impressions on the high ground.
I think so, too.
That's my Ewan. You guys like it?
Yeah, no, I agree. You should do more of that. So, okay. Yeah, Star Wars overall was a lot of fun.
So what score would you give it on our Rotten Tomato scale? What would you give it?
I would give it a 79.
Wow, that's pretty low.
That's not low. I mean, that's a good movie.
Yeah.
And to me, what I'm starting to realize is these massive series, the movies that, one, aren't the beginning and the end are usually in that range for me. Also, with a lot of characters and a lot of storylines, they are hard to build a really coherent story that's just good from beginning to end. So it reminded me a lot of the Avengers movies, which I liked a lot. I thought they were very fun. And as you can see, they make a bajillion dollars. But like Barter said, they're not going to win awards. So I would give it like a 78, maybe a 79. And I'd advise people to go see it. I'm not trying to say it was bad. It was good. It was fun. It just wasn't perfect.
I just felt I felt the stakes were perfectly appropriate.
Yeah.
For what was happening. Like the stakes for The Force Awakens were so gigantically stupid.
They're ridiculous. 4 planets blowing up. Okay. I didn't know those people. I don't give a shit about that. Like the stakes should affect the characters you care about, not just like random planets somewhere.
And the stakes felt real.
Yeah.
They felt appropriate for what was happening to the characters at the time for most of the movie, other than the Finn stuff.
Yeah.
Which is fine. And I don't think anyone that would watch the movie would feel too much differently. So overall, I would give it definitely low 90s somewhere.
Okay.
I would say 91, 92 for me.
I'd give it like an 87 right in there. And just to give you some perspective, I'd probably give Force Awakens like an 82. So I thought it was better. I think they're both strong. I think that they could absolutely come out with a ninth movie that's in the 90s for me. That's a very, very good conclusion to this. Because I think it's the end, but we'll find out.
I wish we'd have talked more about this, but my biggest winner, though, easily, Raylo.
Okay. Yeah.
I would agree.
Kylo and Rey, anytime they're together.
The absolute anchor of the movie, and they will continue to be the anchor of the series.
Yeah, they're incredible. So,
except for they're both dead, but you know, can you imagine what it'd be like?
It was so weird that they both died in that car accident. They
did like a suicide pact. Yeah, it was really strange.
Just drove their car right into
They were like, we're powerful, we'll become Force Ghosts, and then it didn't happen, and they're just dead.
Just drove their car right into a pole. It was just so awkward. It was
fucking weird.
It was sad, though.
It was a good moment.
And then it's just like, why did Chewie have to light himself on fire on their funeral pyre?
Well, and they were letting the Porg drive.
Wookiees burn.
The Porg was driving. I didn't understand that.
They had like 18 of them, literally, you know, wearing a trench coat, ordering a beer at the bar.
Literally no one thinks this is funny.
No.
We're over here just cracking up.
There's
just
three of us.
Literally just terrible jokes and no one else thinks it's funny.
That's it.
All right, guys. So we're going to move on to a really strange big picture today. We're going to do a little deep dive. And, you know, it's the only person we could do this deep dive on is someone from West Philadelphia, born and raised, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Ooh-wee.
Yeah.
I love it.
So we're
going to
do
DJ Jazzy Jeff. That's right. We're going to go through his IMDb page, three entries.
I thought we were doing Alfonso Ribeiro.
No, we're doing the dance later.
Dang, we're just full of jokes today.
Yeah, they're all horrible.
All right, guys. So we're going to do a little deep dive on Will Smith. Before we even look at any of the movies, mm-hmm. before you even try to go through your mind and think of all the Will Smith that you've watched, what are your first impressions of Will? I always make you guys answer first, so I'm going to answer first this time. Will Smith, not a risk taker.
Okay.
Literally only plays good characters, never is a villain, doesn't take any roles that will make him be vulnerable or seen as like not
the
normal man hero person.
Yeah.
And so I have a little less respect for him as an artist. And I actually, if I had to make a comparison with Will Smith, I would say he is his most, the person he's most comparable to is The Rock. As someone who always kind of does.
Horrible take, but.
Why? You think so?
Well, let me get to mine. You finish okay. this on and you can convince
me. I just
me
think he's like
right
The
now.
Rock, where it's just like they're both fun. They're both funny. They both can play this that same kind of character really
they're
well.
They're interchangeable, I think, yes, in some roles.
But my issue with them is they don't take risks. They kind of do the same kind of movies, and they play it safe and just kind of make money off of big blockbuster like B movies.
But they also know what they're really good at. So I don't know if that's smart business-wise. I'm not saying that everything Will Smith touches turns to gold, but I'm saying he knows his strengths, he knows his weaknesses, and he has tried to do some serious roles like
right.
7 Pounds, the Concussion movie, I forget what that was called. Was it just called Concussion?
No.
Whatever it was called, about the doctor.
Maybe it was.
From,
we'll get into it. We're doing the dive.
But he's tried to take a serious turn on some roles and then gets lambasted for it. I'm not saying unrightfully.
Yeah,
I
think he's been good. I mean, he was really good as Muhammad Ali. He's definitely done some good things. Here's my take on him. He's one of the most charismatic and fun action stars around. So if you want somebody that is believable being badass and also has some of the best lines, just absolutely hilarious, incredibly likable, he's your guy. He has tried to do the almost like Adam Sandler-esque, like, I'm going to take some serious roles, and they haven't always panned out. So I think it'll be interesting to go through this and see where he peaked and see what happened when he tried to do something different.
So let's go, before we get into the deep dive.
This is why we're doing it, right? Okay, I'm sorry. Because I just want to announce, you know, we're talking, Bright is coming out soon. It's a big Netflix action movie, and I think it'll be out in a couple days. That's sort of the catalyst. But
it kind of looks fun and interesting.
Yeah, I think
and
it does too.
I'm definitely going to watch it. I think it looks cool. I think before we go into sort of the chronology of the movies that he's made, we should try and name the movie where we think that he peaked.
Okay.
So I got mine in my head.
Okay.
I'm going to go Bad Boys 2.
Okay.
And that was a while ago.
I think that's a pretty good pick. I'm going to say Independence Day.
And I think they're right around
the
maybe
first
like
one.
back-to-back summer type of shit. We'll see. I mean, we could be, they could be 4 years apart. I'm not sure.
I think Independence Day, Will Smith was the best character he could have played, and it played to all of the best things that he did. And he was also kind of a side character just because of all of the stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
It was perfect for him.
I'm going to go with...
But you got IMDb up in front of you.
I haven't looked at it, I promise. Yeah. I'm going to go with Wild Wild West.
Oh, stop.
That's actually a pretty fun movie.
All right, so here we go. Will Smith, deep dive.
Are we doing movies only or TV?
Keep it to movies, okay? Yeah. So we know that he was Fresh Prince in it up. We get that.
I just think stick with we just have to at least not... say he was the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air from 1990 to 1996.
Perfect, thank you. And so, we'll understand and that's happening through a lot of this.
And he was also a musician. So, I mean, he was doing kind of a lot. He was like a...
He was Big Willie style.
Yeah, he was like a Renaissance man through the 90s, right?
He was huge. That's part of why he was peaking.
Yeah.
Because he had huge hit records, too. Hell yeah. Men in Black, man.
That was beautiful.
Stick to the impressions. None of us can sing. Maybe Eric can sing.
I got
to
tell you, I was this close to doing the impression of the African concussion doctor. But I didn't do it.
I'm so glad you
didn't do it.
All right. You have to listen to my recommendation. Okay.
That's why I didn't go there. All right. So, 1986, he was in a movie that has no score called The Image Maker. I don't think anyone saw it. He moved on to Where the Day Takes You, which did really well with an 80 rating. Never heard of it.
Nope.
He moved on to Made in America, which was a disaster at 29. Okay. 93, he was in 6 Degrees of Separation, which is an 88. Have you ever heard of it?
No. I mean, I maybe. Who else is in it? Does it say right away? Or do
I
you
mean,
have to...
I can look at it for you.
Oh, God.
6 Degrees of Separation.
He's not a big star yet.
He's not a big star. He's on the cover of it, though. And it looks like the other people, Stockard, Channing, Donald Sutherland, Will Smith, Ian McClellan, Mary Beth Hurt, Bruce Davison.
Okay. All right.
Moving on.
Yeah.
All right. But it did get an 88. All right. So from there, this
It also spawned one of the greatest games in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Six Degrees of Kevin Bacon. Yeah.
Are you guys ready for this? So that's where he's at right now, right? 6 Degrees of Separation, 1993. He takes a 2-year hiatus from movies, and he comes back with Bad Boys.
Knocked it out of the park.
It only got a 42.
It deserves more.
It does deserve more. It was pretty good.
I think it was really good. I think it was
Tia Leone was hot.
Martin Lawrence was hot.
He was great. I was talking about Tia Leone was physically hot.
Oh.
So now But yeah, I feel you. Martin Lawrence was absolutely... He was, right? I mean, he had his Martin show. They both had huge TV shows to come together, and their chemistry was unbelievable. I mean, dude, this is back when Michael Bay made good, entertaining, great, great action movies.
And they were so funny from a chemistry perspective. And I think that movie got a little bit more... Like, I don't want to say Big Lebowski-level cult status, but I think it definitely took off a little bit more after it left theaters and VHS... was circulating the country, and it was a lot more popular from that end, not necessarily on the front end.
Yeah,
in the box office.
Dude, and then, you know, back when there weren't that many goddamn channels, like, it was always syndicated all the time, so...
Well, and it was like...
People have had a chance to see it.
Those two guys weren't that well-known from a movie perspective, and it was two, you know, cops, F-bomb in this and F-bomb in that, and... You know, maybe it wasn't what the audience was ready for, but it was absolutely hilarious. It was perfect.
All right, guys, from there, it's just shocking that we went from The Image Maker, Where the Day Takes You, Made in America, and 6 Degrees of Separation into Independence Day, or I'm sorry, Bad Boys, which was followed by Independence Day.
That's when I think he was officially on the map.
That's 96, all right?
But I'm not going to say he's peaked yet.
So no, Bad Boys,
he's ramping up.
My take is way off. My
take is it was early.
Bad Boys and Independence Day, followed up by his highest rated movie ever.
Men in Black.
Yeah. So good.
A 92.
I can't believe I missed Men in Black.
Rotten Tomatoes. So, I mean, he went from 4 movies that we hadn't heard of or hadn't seen to 3 movies that are some of the ones he's best known for.
Those are all...
And at this point, he's launched 3 franchises already. I mean,
Bad Boys,
yes, he wasn't
Day
in
Men
Independence
in Black.
Day 2, but it is a franchise.
And he had a rap album that was probably number one in the country for... a while.
That was back when everybody listened to rap and pop stations played rap, which they don't anymore. I got a lot of complaints about that, but it's a different thing.
Welcome to Miami.
Yeah. Oh man, he had a ton of them.
Yeah. Big Willie style.
Dude, you know what's sad? Is it like my kids love rap? And at home, like, I can't find unedited rap, so we end up listening to horrible rap like Will Smith.
What are you talking about? Eminem. What do you say?
Yeah, I can't.
Will Smith don't have to cuss in his raps to sell records. Well, I do. So fuck him and fuck you too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I listen to now. It's like, dude, it's like I'm sick of the Raffy. I'm sick of Justin Bieber. We're going to listen to some rap. It's going to be bad. Either that or like, you know, old school rap that they didn't swear in yet. Yeah. So,
all right. After that, he went into 1998's Enemy of the State.
Actually pretty good. Gene Hackman,
71 overall.
That was like where the whole, you know, they take a grainy picture and they're like, enhance it. That's like the worst movie cliche of all time. You can't get more pixels. You can't generate more pixels, dude. What's on there is there. Stop.
And there was CCTV on every single corner in random spot.
Was that Gene Hackman too? That was a pretty good movie.
I said Gene Hackman.
Yeah, it was good.
It was great. I liked the movie. It was kind of a cool spy thriller tinfoil hat. It's perfect for me.
Oh, dude,
I loved it.
That was why you liked it so much. What was the Rotten Tomato score on that one?
That was a 71.
Okay.
All right, guys. After that, he goes into 1999's. This is a fucking blasphemous rating. All right. Okay. Wild Wild West gets a 17.
Oh, wow. That's so bad. I mean, I liked that movie.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, it wasn't great. But
I was the market audience at the time.
Me too. Yeah. I had the Burger King Wild Wild West sunglasses.
No way. Yeah. You still got them?
I wish.
You're wearing them right now. They look great.
It was like, who was it? Who was his co-star?
Kevin Kline.
Yeah. Kevin Kline.
Boy, did that dude fall off.
Yeah.
It'd be the most boring deep dive.
Do you remember
of all time.
It had a theme song that he made.
Welcome to the Wild Wild West.
With Cisco.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, Cisco.
Oh, dude, I'm not going to sing Cisco. Yeah. Maple Grove.
Maple
shout
Grove
out.
Zone, Cisco.
Yeah.
Hey, if you guys know Cisco, tell him to come on our show.
Yeah, let's talk to Cisco.
Yeah. I feel like he'd have some fun stories.
All right. How much do you love thongs on a scale from 1 to 10? A 10! No shit, Cisco!
If he showed up without the silver hair, I'd be furious.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd be
like,
really
get the
pissed.
Fuck out of here, Cisco.
All right, so after 99's Wild Wild West debacle, he moved on to 2000's. Here it is, first kind of serious role. All right, he was like, I tried the serious movies as like a bit part player. I've pretty much made the same movie, but just one time was fighting aliens, one time was fighting like gangster Mexican drug cartel.
Yeah.
Another time, you know, fighting aliens and then fighting like steampunk people or something.
Yeah, right.
Now he moves on to his first serious role. Didn't go that well. He was in 2000's The Legend of Bagger Vance.
That thing is an unwatchable piece
Matt
of shit.
Matt Damon.
A 43.
Former Deep Dive alum.
43 is way too high for that movie.
Who the hell? Who are these 43% of people that clicked fresh?
They're like, yeah, that's good. This is a good movie.
I love golf so much.
All right, so he moves on to another movie. He's trying to move into a different type of
movie. I feel like that was a movie that after Wild Wild West, his agent was like, let's take a different direction.
You're getting too silly
with this shit. Yeah, we can't see the same guy over and over. Let's try something a little bit different. And then that didn't go well.
You're going to be beggar.
They were like, all right, man, for three straight movies, you've worn nothing but a beater. You've yelled, you've made funny noises.
You've waved your gun around.
Yeah. And, you know, you've been like the cool one of the two in some duo. Let's do
with
something
the uptight,
else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then after that, he went into Ali, got a 67. That was in 2001.
That's all it got. He was really good. Was he nominated for best actor or anything?
I have no idea.
I don't think it was that bad. I remember watching it, and it was definitely more like a biopic of Muhammad Ali as opposed to like a boxing movie, which they tried to market it as, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And I think it was way more entertaining when you saw him trying to portray Muhammad Ali. But the other thing is, I think a lot of the people that wanted to watch it grew up seeing Muhammad Ali.
Well, he was perfect as Muhammad Ali.
Well, but I think they
nailed the speech perfectly.
But maybe to you and me, but maybe the people that were like true boxing, you know, aficionados thought it was just sort of an abomination.
Okay.
I enjoyed it.
I liked it. I'm surprised it's that low.
All right. The next one is one of his highest grossing movies ever. It only got a 39 on Rotten Tomatoes. Men in Black 2.
I really like Men in Black 2. I thought it was better than Men in Black 1.
Yeah, no, they didn't. They thought Men in Black was a 92. They thought Men in Black 2 was a 39.
Damn, all right.
What a dichotomy.
I got to check my memory on some of this stuff. But I guess that I'm still saying at this point he still peaked with, what did I say? Oh, yeah, Bad Boys 2? We haven't made Bad Boys 2 at this point,
no,
have we?
No, we're not even close. I think it's Men in Black.
Damn. All right.
I was one movie off, but it was Men in Black.
Yeah, maybe. Let's see.
So, guys, that was his fourth highest grossing movie ever.
Wow. That's big.
Yeah. All right. Next up is Bad Boys 2.
Oh, here we go.
Didn't do well. It only had
what?
Hey, are you ready for this? It only got a 23 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay, so let me just mention something about old movies on here. Rotten Tomatoes wasn't around at this time, and so this is all like, you know, how this movie has stood the test of time, and then people go back and retroactively give it fresh or rotten ratings. And I think if Rotten Tomatoes was around at the time, people would have liked it a lot better. It was a great, great action movie. I mean,
I think if Rotten Tomatoes was around at the time,
some of the action scenes were great. Like, filmed. Remember, like in the he's fighting the Haitians, and they're spinning the camera on this track around the room and going through the bullet holes. And the
walls.
That
was cool. That was really cool.
And they're just, you know, jabbing the whole time. It's funny. It's exciting. They're just killing people indiscriminately. These cops. Maybe that's why I wouldn't play these days.
Hey,
these cops kill a lot of people.
A lot of time spent on the butt ring, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of butt ring jokes, but there's also one of the best sequences ever when Reggie comes to take his daughter on a date.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't quote any of it because we're three white dudes in a room, but it was so funny. Just YouTube it. He's like acting like the drunk uncle.
It was great.
So funny.
All right. After that, he went on to Jersey Girl.
Wow. Don't remember that one.
You want to take back your peak pick?
If he peaked, he's on his way down quickly.
After that, 2004, he did 58 rated iRobot.
Yeah, see, this is still declining.
I actually enjoyed that movie.
That's pretty good.
I thought it was good. It was a unique take. I thought the stupid, like, weird, like, garb that they put him in and this, like, irrationally angry towards all robots no matter what was stupid. Like, it didn't even, like, kill him. Like, the robot didn't even try to kill him. It just saved him instead of a little kid that he was trying to save.
Yeah.
It wasn't even his kid.
Yeah, right.
So it was kind of, like, silly. Other than that, I thought the special effects in the movie itself were pretty decent.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I'm surprised it's so low. Man, he has really low overall Rotten Tomato scores.
Yeah, next up is 2004's 35 rated Shark Tale.
Skipper. God, that's bad. This is an animated movie. He didn't even give a shit about that.
Next up, one of his highest grossing movies, his sixth highest grossing movie ever, 2005's 68 rated Hitch.
Wow, that's just straight up room. Actually, that movie is pretty tolerable.
He's still collecting checks.
Kevin Smith's really funny.
That is on Kevin James. That is what on Kevin Smith. It's on TBS or whatever all the time.
Yeah.
He's still raking in royalties from that. It's funny. It's so dumb, but it's hilarious.
It's pretty funny.
There's a lot of good one-liners from that. And he's playing probably some version of himself.
Sure.
Which is easy.
Yeah,
I guarantee
he's charming Will Smith. It's easy.
That movie probably took 2 weeks for him to shoot, and he made...
Guys, I feel like we're in a bad place right now. You guys are fighting hard to justify Hitch.
You're right. That's the level that this deep dive has brought us to.
But it's a good guilty pleasure movie. I enjoy it.
All right. Next up, we have 67 ranked, 2006's The Pursuit of Happiness.
See, he's trying to get serious again at 67.
And he's bringing his kid into the mix.
Was that his actual kid? Jaden Smith was in it? Man, the movie was... not good.
It wasn't entertaining. All right, guys. In any way.
This is his second highest grossing movie ever. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
2007.
Hold on. What's the superhero guy? What's the superhero guy that like can't be killed?
No, that's still coming, I bet.
So this one is 69 ranked, 2007's I Am Legend.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
That was good. I did enjoy that movie.
And he carried it, man. It was just really him.
Well, he had to. And he was the only guy in it.
Yeah. That was really good.
But of course, he was running shirtless on a treadmill.
He didn't have
pull-ups.
He didn't have a really deadpan counterpart, unless the dog you consider to be pretty deadpan, in which case, yeah, maybe he was.
All right, guys. It's going to get pretty rotten here.
Oh,
there's a lot of Rotten Tomatoes coming up.
Hancock.
Hancock is the next one. Ugh. It is his second highest grossing movie ever.
Crazy.
2008's Hancock, 228 million in the box office, 41 on Rotten Tomatoes.
There's a movie that's good in the first two acts and just garbage in the third. But yeah, he's declined, man. I'm seeing his last really good movie.
That was 10
Bad
years
Boys
ago.
2.
All right. and by the way, Bad Boys 2 got like a 23.
It's a personal peak, okay?
next up, 2008's 7 pounds. It got a 26.
Not good.
No.
I watched it expecting like, oh, he's going to be really good. No, okay. It wasn't that good.
Next up, we have his 7th highest grossing movie of all time, 2010's 65 ranked, The Karate Kid.
He's in that?
No, that's Jaden Smith.
Oh, I'm sorry. He just produced that.
Okay.
I was like, that's his kid.
Definitely not.
Jackie Chan.
Next up, this one is his 4th highest grossing movie of all time, 2012's. It did 179 million, 68 on Rotten Tomatoes, Men in Black 3.
Cash grab.
It was bad, man. Yeah.
Nothing to say about
There's really nothing.
It wasn't very good.
It was a sequel that didn't need to happen.
All right. From there, he went to 2013.
Tell us it gets better. Tell us it gets better.
It gets much worse.
Oh, my God.
2013, he was in 11% After Earth.
Oh, that movie was so bad. Another one with his kid, right?
Dragging his kid down with him.
Dude, actually, I watched it, so I can't say it's unwatchable. I shouldn't have.
11% is pretty warranted.
Yeah. All right, after that, he went into 2014, 13% Winter's Tale.
Huh?
I don't even know what that is, man. This is getting bad. What else we got?
After that, he skipped a year to...
Do Will Smith things.
To find his acting ability. And he made 56% Focus.
Okay, yeah. God, that was bad too.
So they were peaking on Margot Robbie's, I think, sort of rise to stardom with that. And they needed to attach a witty, funny, charismatic guy to lead it. And it didn't do well.
No.
I didn't watch it. Had no reason to.
He's like a con man guy, right? Yeah. Super slick, teaches her the ways. Okay, they bang, I'm sure, whatever.
Yeah, then after that, he was in 60% Concussion.
It was Concussion. 60%? Jesus.
And they were pissed.
I know, I have my verdict on Will Smith.
And they were pissed that he wasn't nominated for Best Actor. When you review and listen to some of the people that are linguistics experts talking about his... portrayal of the accent, they're like, it's completely wrong. He goes in and out
close.
Yeah, he goes in and out of like South African and like Nigerian, like they're like, he's all over the map with it, and it's just not that great.
Yeah, and the movie wasn't very good, so there you go. 60%.
All right, 2016, his highest grossing movie of all time, 325 million, and that would be 26% Suicide Squad.
Okay, and he was good in that. I think he's good in these movies. I don't think it's, like, except for maybe, like, where he tries to be serious acting. But when he gets to do that, when he gets to be badass, infallible, witty, charming,
good-looking. Gets all the good one-liners.
Gets all the good, right. They write the one-liners for him, and he always nails them.
When he, like, gets to do some comment about, like, almost getting shot by his partner.
Yeah.
Where he's like, whoa! Whoa! Yeah, like whenever he gets to do those kind of lines, he's great.
He's fantastic. Just get him yelling.
You don't pull the trigger till I say so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's peak Will Smith.
Yeah. So after 26% Suicide Squad.
Which we're going to get a lot of in Bright, according to the trailer. We're going to see a lot of those.
Yes.
Lines. His last one that came out is 2016's 15% Collateral Beauty.
Also a piece of shit. That really, really bad.
He has a couple of movies coming up. Bright comes up any day now. In 2018, he's going to be in Bad Boys for Life.
Yes, which I am so excited about. As you can tell, I'm a huge fan of the Bad Boys franchise.
In 2019, he'll be in Spies in Disguise. Don't know what that's about or what it is.
Don't care.
And in 2019, he will also be in Gemini Man.
Also don't care. So is there any reason to think Bad Boys 3 is going to be good?
No.
It's going to be really bad,
no,
right?
It's not going to be good.
Okay, the first checking. One was a 42 and the second one was a 23.
Shit. So we're looking at 14. Yeah. Okay.
So let's look through his finest movies of all time. So his best rated movies, number one is 92 ranked Men in Black from 1997. Number two is 1993's 88 ranked 6 Degrees of Separation.
We're not even going to count that one because he must have been a bit part in that thing.
The next one is
I mean, we had such high momentum for discussing the Will Smith movies, and you're kind of killing it, Aaron.
Okay, I got a couple of them here. Just
can I?
Yeah, no. Okay, I got the last couple here. So he has 69, I Am Legend, 68, Men in Black 3. He has 67, Pursuit of Happiness. He has 68, Hitch, and 67, Ali.
So I think this just speaks to era and genre more than anything. And I don't necessarily think it's a Will Smith problem.
Okay.
Maybe it is a little bit, but because we've talked about his strengths and weaknesses, his persona, it played really well in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
He was crushing.
Yeah.
Everything worked. Kept trying to play the hits through the mid 2000s, and the audience just wasn't having it.
Diminishing returns on those hits.
Just wasn't having it.
Yep.
And then he kept trying to do it even beyond that. And it's, I would, as an actor or as a non-actor, if I was an actor and someone said, we're going to offer you $20 million to come play Men in Black 3. Are you going to say no to that?
No, he's going
to
do it.
No, of course. You're going to do it. Regardless,
he's always had the best success. Just be Will Smith, right? He's one of those guys, and he's tried to branch out and it hasn't worked out. And I think that people sort of have an idea that he can act and he can do these roles because he's taken them. But if you look at those movies, they were bad and they weren't well received, and his acting wasn't necessarily well received. I'm just going to give my overall opinion here, because, you know, we set out to find underrated, properly rated, overrated, and Will Smith is overrated.
Will Smith is vastly overrated.
Yeah, really, he is. Don't you think? I mean, unless like you have this idea that he's just like, you know, charming guy in kind of bad, you know, action comedies. In which case he's great in those, but he's no more than that.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think he's properly rated from the box office perspective. I think he's done well enough to warrant like continuing to make movies.
Yeah,
I just don't think he should do anything other than what he's good at. I think, like you said, like they would have no reason to offer him that part of Deadshot in Suicide Squad, other than the fact that he has a handful of lines that are really good that they wrote specifically for him.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to be charismatic leader guy who's really good at his job and takes it super serious. And he's kind of playing like if Mike Lowry from Bad Boys got to the position of the guy in Deadshot in that movie. He's just playing a different version of that guy, a different version of Jay from, you know, Men in Black,
which is
perfect.
I think it's just he hasn't had the right character yet to play. Like, my idea of a character for him would be like, he's a guy from the streets, the ladies all like him, he's kind of a womanizer, he's probably wearing a beater, but you know what, he's a cop who doesn't follow the rules. He kind of does it his own way. And so he gets put into a position of either investigating some kind of crazy crime that he's probably not qualified to, or maybe aliens. And then as he's investigating this, maybe he does something wrong, does something not by the book, gets pulled off the case, but oh no, he's not that kind of guy. He's going to finish this job even if he's not supposed to. And so that's the kind of role I want to see him in. I don't know if we've seen him in that role yet,
right?
But I think that's what he'd be
best. But wait a minute. Does he have a foil that is very serious and doesn't like his off-the-wall antics?
He probably needs that.
That's what he'll need.
Yeah, he'll need that because it can be
Tommy Lee Jones. It can be, you know, Kevin Kline.
So Bad Boys 3
goes... It can be Martin Lawrence. I don't care who it is. We need that. Or it can be an orc if you're in Bright.
Yeah.
Bad Boys 3, Will Smith and Will Ferrell. They'll be starring together.
There you go.
Yeah.
There's his foil.
That'd be good. I mean, I'm just ready for Bad Boys 3.
Yeah,
no, I want it to be good.
I'm
so
kidding.
Bad.
It's not. It's Will Ferrell in Bad Boys 3 would be awful.
No, you and need that, Martin no. Lawrence is coming back. The whole team's coming back. We're ready.
All right, guys. So it's time to move on to the curtain call. Can't believe we waited this long. Can't believe we made you guys wait this long.
Yeah, sorry for all the Will Smith talk.
Yeah.
Just apologizing for 15 minutes of our podcast.
It was 30 minutes of like talking about Will Smith's terrible movies.
Yeah.
Time in and time out.
So what we need to talk about here is Mr. Robot. And Mr. Robot wrapped up this week in one of the finest hours of television that I have ever seen. What did you guys think?
I thought the Will Smith cameo was great. No, I
wish he was in it.
To be totally serious, I would completely agree with what Eric said. I think if you pitted the season finale of Mr. Robot versus any episode of Game of Thrones this season, Mr. Robot was way better by far.
I agree. It was, as I was watching it, I had this constant thought that this is some of the best TV I've ever seen. It was one of the best finales I've ever seen. It was absolutely captivating. It was edge of your seat. It tied things together so perfectly. And also, it revealed, it had a lot of revelations that sort of made things from season one even make a lot more sense.
They brought a lot of it back.
They brought a lot of it back. And it's sort of, but I also had the secondary thought in the back of my head, like, why couldn't the rest of this season just be half this exciting? It was all, I mean, it was so much of planting seeds. I was behind, you know, I had to watch 3 hours of it in a row to catch up before the finale because I was too back. The show has a pacing problem and it loses people, but man, I'm so glad that I stuck with it because this finale was unbelievable.
I would agree. I think if they went to 8 episodes, I think it would be a little bit better. I think it would force Sam to eliminate some of the stuff that gets a little wonky in terms of narrative and exposition and just that whole flexing my creative muscle, but the audience, most of the audience probably isn't going to get it. Like the whole Full House from season two, and the some of the mosque sequences with the little boy from this season in the episode 8, where you're just sort of like, okay, I mean they're doing, I understand it, but you can cut this down by like 25 minutes.
Well, they're doing an entire hour of dedicated character building to your main character that you've seen for 30 hours. We don't really need that at this point. Agreed. We need some plot.
Yeah.
We know how he feels. We know how he's going to react in certain situations. He's our main character.
Well, I know that they're trying to show the shift a little bit. He was trying to move from two different people into sort of this blend of Elliot and Mr. Robot into one, and that's what they were trying to show. But it took way too long to get there. Like I think Sam's creative enough that I would have trusted him to do it just slightly quicker. In my opinion, Eric,
what do you think? You loved it. You thought it was a perfect season of television?
I thought it was a great season. And this is going to be my steaming hot take that you guys are probably going to tease me about.
Okay.
But I thought that this season was every bit as good as another season that I hold in such high esteem, True Detective season one. I thought it was on board in the same level as that season. And I know that's probably something that most people would disagree with because I think that's kind of been like the great season of television in recent years. I thought this was every bit as good. It was captivating. It was exciting. I feel like I care about every character on the show, good and bad, so very much at this point. And they do a great job of like mixing those characters that you have such feelings for with like these new exciting fringe characters or mysterious characters. And so like the show is like shrouded in mystery and you're constantly trying to find things out and figure things out as a character on the show who only gets to see what Elliot sees, really.
I agree. And the acting has been so phenomenal. You know, you talk about True Detective season one. Okay. Woody Harrelson wasn't great in the show. He was only fine. I mean, it didn't have wonderful acting. It just had Matthew McConaughey and the best thing he's ever done.
Mm-hmm.
This across the board, Bobby Cannavale, best addition ever. Yeah. I'm so glad he made it out. I want to see him again. He's so good. I love his intensity. Grace, I don't even want to say her last name. It's Gummer. She has the opportunity. She's Meryl Streep's daughter. She could be Grace Streep, and she goes with Grace Gummer. I got a major problem with that.
Who's that?
She's the FBI agent. That's Dom.
Oh, yeah.
She's so good. She's great. And she was able to absolutely shine in this finale. I mean, it was a lot about her. So I love her character. I love where they left it off. And we had been talking leading up to this, like, you know, maybe I just want to see this wrap up, you know, and maybe one more season. If it ended now, I would be okay with it if it was a good finale. They set it up. They paid dividends on everything we've been watching, and they set it up in such a way that I want two more seasons at least.
Two more seasons, yeah.
Yeah.
At least one more season.
It was renewed, by the way, for four.
Yeah, of course. It's great. And I kind of think, like, it seems more like an FX show than anything. Like, one that I think has an incredibly loyal fan base that may not have the hugest TV numbers, but has this just group of fans that is not going away.
But they get... let's say 3 million viewers a week every single week.
Yeah.
Whereas some other shows, it's like a little bit higher, maybe a little bit lower. There's dips. No, I think that everyone that watches the show
watches
it every single week.
Yeah.
And they get paid, they got to get millions of dollars from Amazon for the horrible product placements throughout. They have, like, in a pivotal scene, they have, like, two characters talking about their Amazon Echo. God damn it, I have a problem with that.
Someone's got to
pay for stuff. I thought Sam Esmail is this fucking, like, you know, he has complete control over his show, and yet they're going to be like, what else does your Amazon Echo do? I mean, that's pretty much what they did.
No, but
that's fucking crazy.
No, but see, what I like about it, though, is, like,
preceding a lesbian
every
sex scene.
Single thing in the show is, like, it's so incredibly fictional, but it's like so based in 2017, the world we live in, the politics, the technology, everything. I mean, they do such a great job of like making that fictional world seem like it's just taking place here in the world we're currently living in.
Well, I mean, I think
it's pretty phenomenal.
Sorry to interrupt. I apologize. Right. One thing about the Echo is I think it was more of a, maybe they got paid, but I also but I also got it as a joke, like maybe even a knock on Amazon a little bit of how invasive the technology is when you don't want it to be.
Yeah.
Where you're just trying to live your normal life and then it's intruding into what you're doing, even in a sexual scene where it's coming up and it's like, I didn't ask for that. But you're still invading my personal life. I think that was more the line they were going for.
The other thing, and this is what I tell myself so it doesn't bother me so much, is like, this is a show all about modern everything. Modern technology, modern life, what things are really like these days. And product placement is absolutely a modern thing. And it's
somebody's
got
to pay the bills, man.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's part of it. There was a few scenes. It's a wonderful show. It's just like, it takes you out of it when they're talking about their Amazon Echo.
Yeah, so obviously in the show, it looked pretty dire for Darlene, for Dom, and for Elliot. And you had the FBI, who we found out, and I thought it was pretty cool when we found out that the FBI, was the Dark Army owned the FBI because of that whole scene where Mr. Robot had written it on the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a lot of fun.
So cool. The dynamic with those two was just phenomenal.
Yeah,
it got better and better.
It got better and better and better. And honestly, separating them was so fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like having them two completely separate characters living one life was really cool. So you learned that the FBI was compromised or that one of the main agents, and we had known that, for a good chunk of the season, but no one else did. And so when you kind of got that reveal to the characters on the show, that was a lot of fun. I think it's cool too because a lot of the surprises aren't things that you learn. You watch the characters learn those surprises that mm-hmm. you already know.
Right.
And so that's kind of fun as well.
There were certainly some big reveals. I mean, the Price Angela thing.
Yep.
Just straight up go back to episode one. It just fills in so many gaps. It's absolutely a huge revelation. And it sort of was like throughout the show, every single time, even if it's three seasons worth of something that I'm like, well, this is a little weird. Namely, Angela's rise to superstardom in this business when she's really just an average girl. She doesn't have many, special skills. I'm sure she's very good at her job, but whatever. But she's not incredible at something like hacking, where Elliot is. Where when he's at that level, he will always be involved in the biggest hack stuff going on in the world. Like, why is Angela just this superstar in this company? And it turns out that Price had an interest in her the entire time because he's her father. I mean, that was huge.
Yeah. Well, and if you hearken back to season one, she was rejected by the E-Corp CIO at the time who came in to Allsafe to, commission them to manage their, server security and all that stuff. And with Gideon, she was supposed to, come in and lead this meeting, and the guy was like, eh. I have no reason to talk to you.
Yeah.
And then she goes to E-Corp and is all of a sudden like vice president of operations for something immediately. And you're like, wait, she didn't even like make a good impression on the CEO in 5 minutes or the CIO in 5 minutes. How all of a sudden is she vice president? And then it all makes sense.
And at the time you're like, this is weird. And you just kind of accept it and move on because a lot of shows have plot holes like that. This show does not. It doesn't fucking have plot holes. They'll fill it in eventually. It gives you faith in everything they're doing.
Yeah. The other big part, obviously, was they are in dire straits. The FBI agent turns, punches Dom in the face, which was a pretty good scene.
Pretty brutal scene, yeah.
Has her and Darlene in his car drives him to this random farm. Elliot also is taken to the farm, and it looks like they're there to be executed. And it was pretty exciting to see them escape a situation where Elliot ended up playing all of his cards. It didn't work very well with White Rose's number two. I don't know what his name was.
Henry?
Yeah. So he played all of his cards with Henry.
Yeah.
Henry still was going to kill him. And Joey Badass killed all...
Gets a call. It was pretty cool, right? I mean, he gets a call and you're like, you think the call is, okay, time to kill these people. So he stands up, he walks over. The call was to kill everybody else besides the people. I mean, it was pretty cool.
And to talk about, like, we always talk about details and Sam Esmail not leaving anything out. And Joey Badass is just sort of like this, portrayed as like the stoner, courier, bagman, sort of messenger guy.
Great character.
Great.
Leon, right?
Leon, I mean, and you're just like, okay, yeah, he just likes to smoke pot and he drives people where they need to go and then threatens them if they don't do exactly what they're supposed to do. Well, most of the time his eyes are like half closed and he's not really looking. And then all of a sudden when he becomes this assassin, which he absolutely was, he dropped five people in five shots. Mm-hmm. He's definitely a trained assassin in some way. His eyes are wide open. His eyes
are alert,
staring at everybody, focused on the task at hand. And it's like, wow. They definitely think of all of the like exemplary details in a TV show that you don't necessarily fully pay attention to, but you can see them come to fruition in a massive scene like that.
Plus, he had a great comment afterwards when he was rolling a joint and he looked at her and he said, "Hey, girl, you want some catnip?
You want some of this catnip?"
Yeah. Dude, how great is he? I love that
guy.
He's
great. He's amazing.
Everybody in the show is great.
Yeah, and so now you have...
Well, and think about... real quick. He went from a guy who was having breakfast with Elliot in the throes of his absolute mental breakdown...
In season two, yeah.
...to now saving his life from five Dark Army associates saying, "I always have faith in you, cuz..." Kind of deal.
You know, and he did, yeah, he technically saved his life.
Twice now.
He did, but he's also like, he would kill him if he had to in a second. Sure. Like, he's just doing what White Rose tells him. And Elliot has never been more owned by anybody than he is sort of right now, how they've set up season four.
But it's not a coincidence.
Right.
That's happened a couple times now from the same guy.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of fun, though, because he said he's going to call out, he's going to take down the top 1% of the 1%.
I know, it gives him a new mission, too.
They showed him, they showed themselves, and now he was going to have his opportunity to take these people
out.
And
he's going
to
be working on a team with Christian Slater, right? Yeah. I mean, Mr. Robot and him are going to be in the same room with scenes together. I love that. I was missing it. I didn't know how much I was missing it, but it's so great to have two characters interacting instead of a voiceover, right? I mean, like, you get to hear every thought process, right? I mean, he's literally talking to Mr. Robot, trying to come up with a plan, and Bobby Cannavale is like, "I can see that you're coming up with a scheme here. Don't." You know?
Right.
And you get to hear all that, but it's not like a boring, you know, just voiceover. It's a scene. It's a scene between two characters that are the same person. It's very cool.
Yeah, they took down the partition between Mr. Robot and Elliot, which I think is key to move this forward, so that's not this... Now they're not butting heads. Now they're working together.
And I think at this point, I hope that they sort of get along until the end when one of them dies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or both. That'll be the finale. Or both, sure.
Yeah.
And it is definitely going to get better. I think when you see Elliot doing a lot of his hacking and you do like the thumb drive scene with the Dark Army, with Henry and all that stuff, is brilliant.
So cool.
Never saw it coming. Genius. Wonderful acting. Everything was great. And I hope that we get to see more of Elliot going back to, again, the season one. Not necessarily like, oh, it's some guy in a basement with sunglasses on hacking into Verizon, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's that going to meet people, getting to know them a little bit better, and then figuring out all of their weaknesses. I'm excited for season four, for sure.
Can't wait. All right, guys, I think it's all the time we have on this episode of the Northeast Podcast. Happy holidays to you guys. Thanks so much for listening to us, especially around the holiday season. We're really thankful for you guys, so hopefully you guys can enjoy some time with your families, and we'll make sure we get to you guys next week as soon as Christmas is over. We'll be coming to you guys. I'm not sure exactly about the day, but know that you guys will be on our minds. Thanks so much for tuning in every single week. And just know at the holiday season that we're real thankful for you guys. So from the Roadies Podcast, happy holidays. We'll be back with you guys next week.